Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're assessing the European risk horizon. With many still struggling to make sense of the impact of the UK's Brexit vote, and with a largely unpredicted success for Donald Trump in the race for the White House, it's hard not to look ahead to the next potential instalment of political upheaval, and indeed, political shock. So what to make of the European landscape at the end of 2016 and into 2017, with possibly seismic shocks to be felt everywhere from Italy in the constitutional referendum to elections in the Netherlands, in Germany, and perhaps most strikingly of all, in France? This week, our panel of experts will give their view on the likelihood of further successes for anti-establishment politics, on the impact of more populism and maybe more anti-EU sentiment for the bloc, and indeed how investors are and should be best placed to make sense of and plan strategically to exploit such turbulent times. We start with Paul Donovan, UBS Global Chief Economist. Are the outlined European risks front and centre for colleagues, clients and investors alike?
I think it depends very much on who you are talking to. So international investors, I think, are, after the shock of the UK referendum and the US presidential election, keen to stress the issues around politics in Europe. European investors, on the other hand, seem to be somewhat less focused. And I think this is inevitable, that we tend to find that domestic investors have a somewhat different view of their own political risks than do international investors. Perhaps it reflects a different degree of understanding about the cultural issues that surround the politics.
And what does Ricardo Garcia, UBS Chief European Economist, make of the risks ahead and how they dominate current thinking?
I think the experiences in the United States and in the UK have shown that investors these days prefer to add a risk premium to investments when facing these kind of risk events.
We asked Themis Themistocleous, who oversees UBS European Research too, whether these potential European risks are indeed at the heart of current discussions and strategy.
The political landscape it often has an impact on the market, and so as such, you always need to watch it. Obviously, what drives markets ultimately is the economic conditions, but on the margin, we have to always keep an eye on what happens in politics.
There were well-documented problems with polling, both in the UK pre-Brexit and US pre-Trump, and with increasing anti-establishment political happenings pretty much everywhere. Do such occurrences serve to remind us of the importance of always coming back to the economic fundamentals? Paul Donovan, again.
You do have to return to economic fundamentals. The irony is that most economic fundamentals are actually opinion polls. If you look at the purchasing managers indicators, for example, which have enormous and frankly unrealistic levels of support in financial markets, these are just opinion polls, as is consumer confidence. And a lot of the data that is used even for something like GDP is actually survey-based data, so an opinion poll with good PR, basically. So yes, we have to look at the end of economic fundamentals, but I think what the problems of opinion polls have reminded us is that we have to be very, very broad in drawing on data in order to get a realistic picture of what is going on in the economy. And when it comes to the political risk, I think it also helps that we conduct scenario analysis. You know, we don't assume one particular outcome regardless of what the polls are saying, but we look at what might happen under a range of different scenarios politically in order to be prepared for whatever comes next.
And to Ricardo Garcia again next, does he agree that this serves to remind of the importance of the fundamentals?
We learned in the US and the UK experiences here that in particular phone polls have proven to be rather inaccurate in the age of digital information. And it has also shown us that there is a group of voters that we call shy voters, no, that actually want to vote against the establishment and mainstream political forces, but don't acknowledge that in the polls. And this has distorted to some extent the polls as we know it. And our advice would be to rather build a safety margin into polls when assessing the risks around the political outcomes.
Indeed, sticking to the fundamentals longer term is critically important, agrees Themis Themistocleous.
Often, investors not only misread what the political outcome will be, but also the reaction of the market, which makes it even more tricky if you try and trade the markets. That's why sticking to your views longer term is even more important in this environment, because if you look before Brexit, before the US elections, a lot of people predicted that if Trump wins, then the markets will drop. If Brexit came through, then UK would underperform. Yet the opposite happened in both cases. And people that tried to position themselves into the event and then try and switch around, they most probably lost a lot of money in the process.
Now, let's turn next to France specifically and look in a little more detail at the specific challenges on the political landscape there. There is an understandable fear in many quarters that the shift to nationalist, populist politics, which we've seen in a number of places, could be coming to France next. This week, the former Prime Minister François Fillon was confirmed as the Conservative right candidate and the likely main challenger to Marine Le Pen and the Front National next year. We asked Christine Ocron, commentator, writer on French affairs and regular Monocle contributor, about Fillon. On economics, he's been painted as a sort of French Thatcher. In fact, he's a self-confessed Thatcherite. Does that strike a chord with the French public, or are they more wary in Christine's view?
No, I think it strikes a chord, but a painful one, because obviously the French always say when they are asked in polls that they are for change, and then of course you discover that they are for change as long as change doesn't affect them directly. And especially with Fillon's intention to cut into the public servants sector, he says that it has to be cut by 500,000 people, which doesn't mean sort of kicking them out, but it means not renewing that many contracts. And that, of course, is an argument which the left, whenever the socialists will eventually find a voice and a leader again, and that's not about to happen overnight, but that's where the left will attack Fillon. And by the way, that's where Le Pen will attack him too, because the far right in France has gained a lot of voters precisely in that kind of people. That is to say, civil servants, blue and white collars, who are concerned about losing welfare advantages and the like.
Le Pen, meanwhile, is interesting. She's something of an ambiguous character. Is she an anti-immigration and anti-EU socialist in some ways, or a right-winger that believes some socialist ideas have merit? Christine, again.
Well, that's a very good point, but I think you enhance the whole ambiguity of populism. Populism is neither right or left, as we've known it, from our political schooling days. Populism mixes those lines, and that's very much what you saw in Britain with Brexit. And so I think that Marine Le Pen, whose economic program is indeed very confused, and except for the anti-EU stance, which in itself is very ambiguous because she has realized that she can't say that France has to get out of the euro, for instance, because the French, in their vast majority, do not want to get out of the euro. So I think the more Le Pen will attack Fillon on economic issues, the more ambiguous the far-right economic platform will actually appear to be. And so that is going to be an interesting contest on that side. But of course, the big question mark is, what's going to happen with the socialists, with the sort of traditional left. There are so many candidates now for their primaries, which are supposed to be organized next January. And nobody knows yet whether François Hollande will actually run, although he should probably say that sometime this week. But it's a very confused scene on that side. And that's why, as you said from the very beginning, that most experts actually think that the contest at the end of April will be between François Fillon and Marine Le Pen.
Next, on the broader question for France and indeed for the wider world of whether politics' populist wave has reached its peak or if it has further yet to travel. Renaud Tillet is a research associate at Policy Network here in London.
I think François Fillon has a strong profile to prevent a win from Marine Le Pen because he appeals to very conservative people. And we know that it's one significant part of Marine Le Pen voters, especially the socially conservatives, you know, the ones who are, for instance, anti-gay marriage, and also the quite patriotic, nationalistic ones, because François Fillon talks about, France's independence, candor. So this is typically rhetoric which appeals to right-wing populists.
So is Fillon himself a populist? And is one issue here that mainstream politicians almost have to play at populism in the name of short-term political expediency?
As much as François Fillon denounces the system, embraces this patriotic rhetoric, he doesn't go down into caricature too much, you know. You really have to distinguish between his solutions and Marine Le Pen's solutions. So he's not anti-European.
Renaud Thiers there. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the bigger picture across the continent of Europe and pose the difficult question of exactly how much worse the situation can get. Don't worry too much, though. We'll also find some reasons to be cheerful for investors and politicos alike. We've been discussing the European political risk horizon. Italy, France, Germany, so many critical decisions ahead. We asked one of Monocle 24's regular contributors, Xenia Wickett, head of the US and Americas programme at Chatham House, how bad can the situation get? And is summoning the spectre of a post-Le Pen election win Frexit vote a bit previous or a necessary consideration?
I think we're right to be worrying about these kind of things, but we're worrying about the wrong thing. The thing that we should be worrying about is the fact that there appear to be huge populations across the West that feel disenfranchised, feel left out of the system, feel like the system isn't serving their needs, feel that they are doing worse than their parents. In fact, they're doing worse than they were a decade ago. The system, the democratic capitalist system that we have lived with for the last 70 years, is not serving a significant portion of our populations. That is the thing that we should be worrying about. That's the thing that we should actually be trying to solve, which is, can the system be made to work for all? And if it can't be made to work for all, what changes do we need to integrate into the system so that everybody has an opportunity? Because they clearly don't today, and they don't in the United States, they don't in England, and it's quite possible that they don't elsewhere in continental Europe. And so I think that we are fixated on the kind of elite political changes, whether it's in France or it's in Austria or it's in Italy, potentially in Germany. And it's the wrong thing to be worried about. We actually need to be worried about what the underlying problem is and whether our system can actually cope with that. And if it can't, what we can do to change it so that we don't have these major political breakups.
So hypothetically, what could a Frexit vote mean? How worried could or should we be about an existential threat to the whole European project? Ricardo Garcia explains.
Well, we get these kind of questions in a lot of member states at the moment, and needless to say, France has a particular weight given that it's really at the heart of the Eurozone and the European Union together with Germany. So this is taking on a particular relevance. Now, the question is, how likely is that? If you look to next year, we think that it's unlikely that she would gain the critical mass necessary in the parliamentary elections to push through a referendum on the euro or EU. So legally, yes, it's possible, but it requires a certain amount of parliamentary seats, which obviously is also possible, right? But we have looked at the numbers, and it turns out that she would actually have to double the success that Front National had in the regional elections of December 2015, which in itself was already a great success. And just a few weeks after terrorist attacks in Paris and at the height of the refugee crisis. So possible, yes, but rather unlikely. Should it happen, obviously, that she became president, then we think that investors will still become cautious and add a risk premium to French assets, because there's always a risk. And if she becomes president, obviously the risk is higher, right?
With an example like France, there may be a perceptible Frexit risk. And even if that's highly, highly unlikely, we should mull it nevertheless, says Paul Donovan. But could it actually happen?
I think in the event that France were to leave the EU, it would be cataclysmic. The issue here, of course, is that this would threaten the very existence of the monetary union. France was one of the original six of the EU. I mean, this would be
a seismic political event. To get there, of course, would require, at this stage, three things. Firstly, that Le Pen would win the presidency. Secondly, that the Front National would be able to command a majority in the National Assembly. And third, that the electorate of France would then vote to leave in a referendum. The probability of that sequence of events taking place, as in all three events taking place, I think is extremely low. And it is noteworthy that since the UK left or voted to leave the EU, support for the EU has risen in countries like France, according to opinion polls. Now, we all know the problems of opinion polls, but on the basis of the evidence that we have, there does seem to have been an increase in support for the EU in the last few months.
Themis Themistocleous oversees European research at UBS. So we asked him to take a look at the bigger picture. Short-term political upheaval seems likely, but longer term, could there be existential questions for the very EU project? And do you need to be mindful of this doomsday scenario?
You always need to look at tail risk, but it doesn't mean you shape your investment philosophy and trading based on tail risk. By definition, tail risk have low probability, and as such, you can't base all your investments in that. But you always need to watch them, because if they do materialize, they can have a big impact on the market. Now, the future of Europe is a very much a topic since the Greek crisis, and then Brexit brought it to the fore again. French elections will bring it up again. Even the Italian referendum, a lot of people saying, well, if you have snap elections, could it be that five-star movement comes in? Would they then kick off a referendum on the euro? So that question, I think, will persist for some time still to go. But if I look at each one of those cases, let's start with the Italian referendum. That's basically this weekend. Even if no wins, even if Renzi resigns, then I still think we're going to see most probably a technocratic government until end of next year, beginning of the year after, and then you have elections. Depending on how the electoral law is changed, the chances of five-star movement coming into government is not very high. But even if they come into government, if you look at their manifesto, the referendum on the euro seems to come and go regularly. So I'm not sure they will call a referendum. And even the referendum is not constitutional. So it's a lot of hurdles before you get there. The same with Le Pen. The chance of Le Pen coming to power, especially following what we've seen with the Republican primaries, it's most probably the probability has come down. And then again, if she wins, would she call a referendum? It's one thing to be in opposition and make some claims. It's another thing if you come to power. So I think it's the chance of Europe falling apart at this stage. It really is very much a tail risk, not a base case, not even close to a base case.
And what, before we move on, about specific worries concerning Italy ahead of the referendum there? Ricardo Garcia, again, takes up the story.
Of course, looking at the polls, the no is gaining momentum in Italy. Nonetheless, we make the case that the referendum per se is actually not the key thing in Italy, but rather the electoral law, which is playing a decisive role whether the anti-establishment party five-star movement gets to power or not. And that question won't be answered with the referendum alone. There's also a constitutional court proceeding on the electoral law, so further changes will materialize in any event. In the case of no, it will even have to be replaced, because you would have two electoral laws for the lower chamber and the Senate. And in the event of yes, the prime minister is actually keen to adapt it anyways. Top of the changes acquired from the constitutional court, which are still yet to be defined. So, of course, a no would be negative, because it would mean political instability in Italy. It would mean a slowing down of reforms. It would mean more uncertainty with regards to the banking sector reforms and all the related topics. But ultimately, what really is decisive in Italy is the electoral law. And that won't be fully resolved yet on Monday or Sunday.
Finally on the programme, we asked our panellists to remind us how to think more strategically. Polling isn't given answers, nor are the political elites, as we've been hearing. Robert Fox is the defence editor at the London Evening Standard newspaper and a regular voice on Monocle 24.
It's partly education, and it's also the investment in applied education at one or two removes, including think tanks, because Europe is very divided. The Europe of 28, if Brexit goes through, of 27, is much more divided than the general media consensus. By that I mean media outlets that play to an international audience as well as a national one are simply not getting this. I travel a lot in Europe in different guises, holiday maker, former student, teacher, as well as journalist. And the divisions I am now finding on whatever grounds, including regional divisions, including spurious nationalisms and ethnicities, like how Je suis de l'Occitan, I am from Friesland, I am from the Alto Adige, and we are just not understood. Forget about Alto Adige not being understood in Rome. We're not understood down the valley in Torino, Milano, and Genoa. This is a huge problem, and it's something that's been coming a long time, because it is the growth of populations. We are much bigger. It's the movement of populations. It's the change of conditions, environment. We're now predominantly urban and suburban. And it's also, obviously, communication. And we burble, we journalists, endlessly about communications. But the connectivity aspect, we haven't really grasped at all, because that is the true point of globalization, which we haven't caught up with. And Europe is looking very old and very tired in front of it.
Robert Fox there. Now, we are an optimistic bunch here at Monocle, so we sought some consoling words. Does Ricardo Garcia have any? Well, the Five Presidents report addresses some of these major worries, as Ricardo explains.
Well, obviously these are questions that the heads of state also spend time on, and there is actually a plan to maybe not fix all problems, but actually to improve the setup that we have in Europe. It's called the Five Presidents Report, which includes the presidents of the five European institutions that put together a plan based on a mandate from the heads of state of the European Union. And that foresees further integration and improvement of governance, more safety mechanisms in particular in the Eurozone. The only drawback is that this is planned for the next 10 years or so. So this is really a long time. And with that, obviously, time is ticking. But at least there is a plan. People are working on that. Progress is slow, but there is a plan. The other bright spot is also the fiscal side. After the global financial crisis, government books got out of control. Fiscal deficits skyrocketed. And by next year, 2017, almost all member states will have their fiscal deficit at or below the Maastricht limit of 3%. So I think this is a big change compared to the global financial crisis. And third but not least, also the unemployment rate is falling very fast. The hiring expectations in the Eurozone are at the moment at the highest level since the global financial crisis. And we think that the unemployment rate will fall to single digits still this year.
How else might we feel a little better if we look at the longer-term picture, perhaps? Does Themistocleus have any consoling words for us? Where are the best opportunities out there?
If you look at the economy, European economy is actually in pretty sound position, admittedly with help of ECB and loose monetary policy. But GDP this year in Europe is going to grow most probably around 1.6%. That's 60% above trend. Next year, we think it might slow down a bit, but still 1.3%, 30% above trend. So the economy is continuing to evolve in a positive way. The unemployment is coming down. So we continue to be on a recovery path. That's positive for the economy, for the wealth of the people, and for potentially risky assets. We think that due to the good development in economic growth in Europe, trade surplus, that should be supportive for the euro. The euro is very much undervalued versus the dollar. So over the next 12 months, we think we're going to see a stronger euro. That's a nice investment opportunity to play, especially if you look at how the market is positioned. Going back to your earlier comment, market pretty much worried about the political calendar in Europe and the outcome. And as a result, we've seen some weakness in the euro. We've seen weakness in Italian equities, especially in Italian banks. So there is a possibility of some reversal of that.
And finally, Paul Donovan finds another silver lining to the cloud that does feel like it's descended with an air of some permanence.
Well, I think the one thing that has come out of the recent political upheaval, which is a very positive development in my view, is that this has started to engage younger people in the political process, that younger people have tended not to see their desired outcomes come through in recent elections, and we've seen a rise in the engagement of the younger population. And I would hope that this would be repeated in Europe, that younger people start to become more engaged in the established political process, and by doing so make their voices heard. As it were, the lessons from the Anglo-Saxon political shocks may actually provoke more engaged populations. And that can only be better for democracy in the longer run.
And that's Paul Donovan, bringing us to the end of this 113th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.